Welcome to Emotional Sobriety. I love our holiday episodes. Like, we usually end up doing one before Thanksgiving and then one before Christmas. And then we do New Year's one sometimes, which is a lot about kind of what we would like to accomplish in the year ahead, or kind of like taking stock of, you know, what the past year's meant to us. But yeah, I mean, it's there's just so much emotional sobriety, both like challenges and opportunities baked into these milestone events, I guess. And I don't know, like, and I just thought, like, I like Joe's suggestion that we just kind of talk about, what I interpreted from, you know, the blurb that you sent, and I'm just going to read it real quick.
Okay.
So just give me a sec. Yeah. You sent: emotional sobriety and social convention. What does paddling your own canoe look like in holiday season? Not everyone is grateful. Not everyone is part of a holiday gathering cliche greeting card family. There isn't one of the 15 chapters about emotional sobriety that do not apply to some or many of us at these high expectation, highly commercialized moments. And while it's all great for half of us, how about the other half who dread and endure these emotionally triggering times? And you know, the word that kept coming up when I was reading that, to, you know, Alan likes to use it, it's the shoulds. And I went to a Friendsgiving yesterday, and what sticks out in my head is that Sue Ann was talking about, like, you know, she would much rather like just write her nieces and nephews a check than to have to like shop for, you know, for gifts, you know, to give the kids that, like, you know, she doesn't feel super passionate about like the gifts, or not doesn't understand what they might like to receive. And so what would she would feel more comfortable with, and if she's in the giving spirit, is, you know, just to give some money. But feeling this weight of expectation of like, no, you're supposed to come up with some cute, you know, some cute bauble, you know, that a kid's really going to like, you know, get jazzed about. I think we didn't talk about it much, but like, I was just thinking, like, I believe in come as you are, you know, and that's what we talk about on the podcast, is like, not freeing ourselves from the shoulds, and just like, the more that we can make these events or our intersections with other people not like an occasion to like bury each other under an avalanche of rules, but to just try and like let people do that which naturally occurs to them, and kind of try to find a space for ourselves with them so that they can find a space for themselves with us. Well, maybe we could just get started talking about the upcoming holiday.
It was a great intro, because my thought was, for half the people in the world, they love holidays, right? Because they have great experiences with holidays, and they have positive expectation with the next one. And I think, though, I don't want to crap on those people's parade by any stretch of the imagination. But the other half come from dysfunctional homes, don't have greeting card type of family. They, like I said earlier, they're not grateful, right? And I don't know that pretending to be grateful is the best way to sort of process that. So what about them? And how are they going to apply their emotional sobriety skills without diminishing themselves or excluding themselves? Just sort of, you talked about just showing up is important. Next week, we're going to be doing chapter 5 in this little Zoom thing of 30 things, practical advice for living well, with Bill Schaberg, who we had here. And chapter 5 is, you can pretend to care, but you can't pretend to be there. And that is a part of emotional sobriety at a time like this, right? Like, you can bow out, say, look, you guys have fun, I'm not coming. You don't have to explain it. You just say, maybe next time, right? And if you don't want to go, if you've had bad experiences and can't possibly see why it'd be better this time, You can do that. Or you can show up to show you love people, right? And, you know, it isn't what I want to do. I'd rather do something else, but I'm going to show up. And there isn't a right or wrong choice there. It's just a matter of what is the best way to live emotional sobriety, which is clarity, discernment. It can be paddling your own canoe and staying home, or it could be showing up for people you love, because, you know, a words or a greeting card won't do that. That whole idea of, buying stuff for other people, that just adds into our sort of over-commercialized world where we're sold in commercials the idea that we're inadequate, that maybe our gifts are inadequate, right? And the solution for that isn't dreaming of abundance. It's sort of being real, right? I am good enough. I have enough. I will be okay. I got some work to do. Sure I do. But I'm fine just the way I am. That's emotional sobriety. You know, it's not pretending things are different. It's not jumping into social convention that don't agree with my soul, but it's just, you know, separating myself from those things, which, you know, one year I might do it different than I do it another year.
The third kind that came into my mind immediately are the people who basically, you know, we don't just act out in addiction with our substance of choice or our behavior of choice. We're addicts, a lot of us. It's like, and one of the ways that we're, you know, addicts is that there's the old cliche definition of going back to doing the same behavior, expecting better results, you know, that it's going to be better this time. It's like, that's what people do with the holidays all the time. It's like, even though they've been burnt every damn year, you know, just like I had all the information about why I needed to stop drinking a long time before I stopped drinking. I had everything I needed. However, I didn't use it. So many people have been burnt one of my nutshells says surprise is denial's last holdout, because that's what happens is no matter how many times we've been burnt, when it happens, we go, can you believe this? You know, and anybody around us who's witnessed this with us will say, yeah, I believe it, because it happens to you every year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that makes sense.
We work ourselves up to that Homer Simpson moment where, so part of what we can do is help people with your categorization of that, Joe, is to because I think that's probably what you're probably doing here is saying it's okay to be in the category that is not all these things, you know, and I like the fact that you're talking about, and there's a lot of us who fall into that category, and the truth is it's a continuum. I don't come from the craziest, most dysfunctional family in the world, but there was a lot to be desired. I'll just talk about holidays. There were a lot of positive things in the holidays. Lots of disappointments. Lots of hurt. I never grew up like, and many people have this. Never understood why, you know, at the end of the holidays, I would have this dip in me that was just like, what is this? And it's, you know, basically ultimately described it as this emptiness, you know, that would be there. And it's like, I didn't know where it came from. And it's like, and it's based on those expectations you're talking about, Joe, is that it's all supposed to be the good. Whereas part of the thing would be, part of the emotional sobriety is, look for the good, you know, and if you can, contribute to the good, make it better than it has been. Do that and enjoy that, you know, and little things. Like one of the things I've learned about showing up is if you're in a relationship, a coupleship, then basically sometimes you're showing up. You don't have to. I used to bitch and moan about going to Dee Dee's families because it's horrible. It's like, but what I finally got through therapy was I wasn't going, it had nothing to do with her family. I was going for her, period. She wanted, you know, I still to this day could not tell you why she wanted to go to those things because I came from a family where we just stop. We just disown each other and go away. But Dee Dee grew up in a dysfunctional family and a very loyal dysfunctional family. And ultimately, I can tell you with hindsight, it meant a lot to her. Still does. When there's not a lot, some of the family's not left anymore. But it meant a lot to her when I showed up with her for these things. And once I got it straight in my head, I'm doing that for her and ultimately for myself because I feel better about myself as a husband. So there's always that positive selfishness. Then I could do it, you know. Because I had a realistic expectation. No matter what you're doing, if you have to do it, you might as well have a nice time, you know. So in a way, sometimes it's a matter of I teach people sometimes how to kind of mess with their family's minds when they go home because you know not in a mean way, but just you know you because as you get to be. As you realize all the stuff that you're doing by rote, by just because the rules are there. I think it was you, Joe and Patrick a minute ago just said something about, you know, something about fewer rules because I mean, man, you know, we have all these rules and when we get to the holidays, the manual gets thicker and thicker. I mean, it's just like, there's so many unspoken rules. And that's the thing. They're mostly unspoken. I mean, and unspoken rules means how do you know them? Well, you know them when you break them because then everybody gives you the skunk eye and everybody, and you feel horrible and all that other stuff. But it's like, of course, nobody had the respect on the front end to tell you what the rules were.
A holiday is about taking time out to do something that's meaningful, right? And that can take a number of forms, but it's life gets busy, life gets lifey. So the holiday, and you know, it could be like a state holiday. So that means that a lot of us who work, you know, we get that window of time to do what we want to do. But like, I mean, to me, that means, you know, very few rules exist surrounding that. It's about like, well, what's the most meaningful use of that time? And, you know, that could be time in respite and isolation or time to demonstrate your feeling towards your fellows. But I don't know, I guess I'm pretty like agnostic about how people use that time.
There are tools through the process of emotional sobriety that I find useful. One is stay present. Why am I worried about it 2 weeks ahead of time? Right? It's one day. Right. Just, you know, sure, I have to prepare for these things. Right. What am I going to bring? What do I need? Right. What's my mode of transportation? Or if I'm entertaining, you know, how many people are there going to be? What are we going to eat? What are people's food preferences? All that sort of stuff. But I don't need to ruminate about it for 2 weeks, and the other emotional sobriety skills are bring positive regard and be curious, right? Instead of having these negative expectations and waiting to be triggered, right? Like cocking my gun and just waiting, you know, to, you know, get emotional about it. And like, nobody wants to be triggered, right? Like I'm not victim blaming in terms of saying that it's important to, you know, bring a new way of looking at these things. For some, nobody wants to be traumatized. And for some people, just staying away is the only way to do it. And I've been there and done that. And I've also, through some of the work I've done, I've learned these things, right? You know, curiosity, positive regard, stay in the moment. And, you know, then it's a new experience, right? You know, I'm not using my 7-year-old cells that are all dead in my body. I'm a new person going into this familiar experience, but why should I expect it to be the way it's always been?
Have positive regard. It's a beautiful thing. However, if we're not careful, people will hear that. And this is a cultural thing. We hear that as have positive regard instead of negative expectations, which is impossible. Okay. You can only have positive regard with the negative expectations. And it's like what I find is it's a gigantic relief when people can get, it's a little hard to get your head around because it's so different than what we've been brought up with.
Oh, wait. But I don't understand. Explain that.
It's well that you don't, that contradiction. We're not ever replacing anything. We're not ever getting anything. We added recovery to our lives. We didn't get rid of addiction. It's like your addiction, Patrick, and my addiction are alive and well inside of us and have actually been completely unharmed by our addiction. If my addiction gets a chance to come back today, it comes back in full form, healthy as can be. Right. When I hear from him, he's every bit as good a lawyer as he ever was to try to talk me to tell me my holidays are the perfect time to go out and have some tequila and all that. So all I'm saying is what we do always is we take what we want, what the good thing is, and we put it in there with the negative so that it sets up an expectation for people that says it's OK. You know, I mean, that's one of the main things I'm doing with clients all the time is when they say, well, my eating disorder is still saying this, I'm going like, of course it is. My alcoholism is still wanting me to do this. Yeah, your alcoholism is not going to change. Your eating disorder is not going to change. Our family programming is not going to change. There's going to be that little guy inside of us that wants to please everybody and go with all that programming. And what we're doing is we're adding really an adult part that's just said, that adds in there that says, no, we don't have to do that. And think about it this way. And when we have the choice, I mean, because what I have, I can say this myself, in any part of recovery, the difference in the moment now is that I have a choice that I didn't perceive before. Now, what I also believe, we look philosophically, did I always have that choice as an adult? Yeah, I always had the choice as an adult. That I wasn't perceiving it, therefore I wasn't taking it. But when we do, in fact, have the choice and we're aware of it, here's the cool thing about human beings. We'll take the better choice. The reason we've kept fucking up is because we kept thinking that was the best choice. Drinking was the best choice for me for a long time, as far as I knew, you know, and the idea of not drinking sounded like a stupid idea, you know, and in this case, so we applied this to the family stuff is like stuff that we've never even considered saying, oh, I don't have to do it that way. That's what Joe's talking about. Joe's talking about like, no, Because I see that with clients during the season all the time. I remember a group therapy thing where we had a woman one time who just she just kept saying I don't want to go I have to go home for Christmas. I don't want to go home for Christmas, you know. And something we call home was where her parents were. She never had lived there, but I don't want to go there for Christmas. It was a kind of a cool group. Somebody said to the woman, she said, you got your wallet with you? And she goes, let me see your driver's license. And so you got the driver's license and he said, you know, according to this driver's license, you're like, you know, 50 something years old, you know, and we all kind of, aha, clever deal. But that's the point we ended up making with her is you don't have to go, you know. Now I love this story because it can sound cynical, but it's perfectly good for realists. We kept talking, we helped her go through that, and ultimately her reason for going home for holidays was she did not want to be written out of the will. Okay? Her family had money and they would punish her. And I never saw a group come together so fast, so quickly. Everybody said, absolutely go home. You know, you need it, go do that. Don't screw yourself over financially, you know. We'll support you through it. You know, take our phone numbers with you. We'll do that. But it's like, but she came out of that going. She's going. She probably had a nicer time that time than other times because she was just going for the exact reason she was going.
For the people that have trouble getting into the car or don't want to get into the car to go out to the the gathering. And then also the people who haven't been invited. Those are like the figures that have kind of come up for me in talking about this. Like, the times are tough around now for those individuals. And, where is there like a common emotional sobriety locus point, you know, for people struggling with that around this time?
It's the reality check, right? Like nobody's coming. Like if you're waiting to be rescued, right, it's going to have to be internal, not external. And just sort of separating the feelings are an important barometer, but they're also not facts, right? Every one of these things I've dreaded was fine. Maybe a couple of uncomfortable moments, but, you know, it was my expectation and my relationship with it, right? And those are things I can inform. I can go, you know, hey, last time was just fine, right? It wasn't what you wanted to do, but it was the right thing to do, and it turned out okay. You know, I had all of these expectations about what I needed to do to be remarkable, not good enough, right? Just an aside, one of the early times Alan and I worked together on emotional sobriety is several of us were invited to do this emotional sobriety thing for on Zoom for the Living Sober Free Thinkers in Arizona. And it was Alan, myself, and two others, including the host. And it went so well, we decided, well, let's do a few more. Each of us bring a topic. And what the topic I brought was sober enough, like not being in this constant, I'm not good enough. That step four wasn't good enough. I haven't made amends enough. I haven't helped enough people. It was just about how much recovery work do I need to do to maintain my sobriety? And I turned it into a full-time career in ways. And how do I live life being sober enough, doing enough service, being thoughtful enough to other people, controlling my emotions and being able to self-regulate most of the time, right? I don't need to do it 10 out of 10 times. I don't need to help everybody who asks. I just need to be sober enough. And we had a great discussion about that. And a lot of my, you know, bent up expectations about these types of events is that everything's got to be remarkable. Everything's got to be outstanding. Everything's got to be a 10 out of 10. People aren't expecting that of me. I'm putting that on myself. And, to just show up, be present, and be good enough, thoughtful enough. And, you know, it's probably going to be more fun than I think it will be.
You've delivered us to a concept that is probably pivotal and needs to be a part of everything anytime, but certainly with the holidays, and that's simply self-compassion. Because sober enough is simply compassion. It's like, you know, because we're never going to be, you know, if we have expectations above that, the way our head works with our should monsters and stuff, we only have those expectations so we can set ourselves up to be disappointments to ourselves. That's the only reason those additional expectations exist, in my opinion. So I like the idea of saying, okay, but also as we listen, whatever you hear from us, take what's helpful, leave what's not, and find out what fits for you. And I always want to use another example from my life is Dee Dee, and I've learned this through the years, is, and we can explain it if we look at our past history and stuff like that, and we can make it about pathology, or we can just make it about preferences because of how we've lived our lives and grown up. Because you brought this up to me, Joe, when you just said that about people who are invited or not invited. Some people care. about being invited. Some people, it matters. My wife, it matters. It really matters if she's left out of things. It's like, and we're not the most social people in the world, but during the holidays, you know, that was, it was a big deal for her, and it is a big deal for her, and it matters to her. I don't give a shit. I mean, I can literally sit at the holiday. Nothing's happened on the, if it wasn't for me worried about, and this is probably codependency, but if it wasn't for me worried about Dee Dee not feeling good, it's like, when I was on my own, I sat through many holidays just by myself. Granted, I was drunk. I give that so maybe that wouldn't have been the same. But I don't have any history of being on my own, feeling left out or any of that stuff. But that's just me. And so we have to be really careful not to project. You know, we too often use ourselves as the standard of measure. So somebody's not like us, we go like, I don't understand why you do that way. Well, they don't think that way. They don't feel that way because they're not you. You know, they're different people. So the compassion for yourself and for others is listen both ways. Listen to yourself. If you got something in there that says this is really important to me, pay attention to it. Be kind to yourself. Now, maybe it's not even possible, and you're going to need some help to get through the acceptance. But maybe it just means you're going to have to get a little bit more creative to help you get what you need. But it also means listen to the other person, and when they're telling you something hurts them, know that it hurts them because they're telling you that.
Before we wrap up, we've got like 15 minutes left or so. Maybe we could talk about what we're bringing into this holiday season, maybe some desires or some fears. Like I'll just start. My girlfriend Sue Ann is going to be doing Thanksgiving with me and my family in Joshua Tree. And I would very much like for her to enjoy that experience and for them to enjoy her and for there to be like a kind of positive, peaceful commingling of different prickly personalities. And I know enough to know that like I don't want to make it an expectation. You know, I can't burden the event with an expectation of that. Just a desire and just a hope that we're all going to be walking away from there feeling better about each other than we went in. And yeah, so we'll see how that goes. But I'm worried about it. I'm worried because, you know, my mom's a lot of work and, our traditions, I think, you know, Sue Ann's traditions are, you know, her expectations are maybe a little different than what ours have been historically around Thanksgiving. And I'm just trying to accommodate. And it's for me, it's like, yeah, I could give a shit. I would love to just watch Die Hard or, you know, like just do some very, you know, just chill. Like I'm cool with whatever, but I do love these people. And I want everybody to kind of like get along with each other. So we'll see how that goes. But that's me.
But it's also creates a beautiful, you know, by the way, this falls in the category of easy for me to say, because I'm going to need to do this, but it's like, it's what an opportunity. As you know, what's this all about? You know, this is to me where emotional sobriety and the philosophy of stoicism come together, where the ultimate serenity prayer is, I don't control anything except for my mind. That's it. I don't, otherwise anything, any other person, any other event, any other situation, I have no control over it. And the practice of these things, stoicism, emotional sobriety, needs to be to practice putting those into my actual behavior and understanding that is. So what you're saying is, as much as I would like for these things, I want these things to go well, I realize I'm not going to be able to make that happen. It's like, you know, what you're doing basically is basically at the beginning of the holiday, when everybody is there and getting together and stuff like that, you just need to go around and to each one and say, I wish you the best, you know, good luck. And then go watch Die Hard.
Yeah. That part is essential.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a very good, it's a grateful time for me, because this time last year I was at the tail end of my cancer treatment, And I was doing okay, but it was like I had literally zero energy. It's like, and it felt like total shit. I was being ate through a tube in my stomach, and you know, just yeah, I was happy, but I was okay. But it was just you know, I was completely on the sidelines of everything. So every bit of the last few months has been, you know, gratitude through contrast. You know, I'm 70 years old and I felt 90 years old a year ago. So I've got my youth back, and that's really good to me. Yeah. Most of Dee Dee's and my families are dead, and it does get simpler. You know, there's just not a lot, you know. So it's, again, for Dee Dee, because she has the belonging thing, it's a little sadder for her, but it's like there are fewer moving parts to navigate as you get older too. So we kind of like that part.
Agatha Christie mode, the dwindling.
That's it. Or like a friend of mine says, we better take cover. Somebody's shooting at us, and we're dropping like flies, picking us off one by one. It's like, yeah, that's what it's like to be this age.
Being the invited Canadian, I'm part of the rest of the world, which doesn't have a holiday coming up this weekend. But my sobriety date is November 27th. And what I can tell you about everybody who got sober November 27th, they didn't know or hope or plan that that was their last drink. In fact, I didn't think it would be my last drink for the next month, right? You know, I was getting the heat off. I was taking a breather. I was trying to get, you know, my shit together. And it just happened to work out that way. Because of the fickle finger of fate. So there's that this time of year. My father will have his 88th birthday on the 29th of November. And, you know, I just love having him in my life as much as my own adult children and siblings. And again, grateful, right? Not everybody, you know, has a parent that's still living, right? So you know, it's there's stuff going on. It's time for reflection, you know, a reason to be grateful and all that sort of thing. And I'm gonna listen to this episode and try to apply what I said.
I'm trying to follow whatever I said, you know, back when I wrote the book in, you know, 1999. Oh, I need to put that into play eventually. What I just said a minute ago is life is better because my relatives are dead. Okay.
Yeah.
What Joe just talked about is how grateful he is to have all these people alive in his life. It's like, so which one of us has got this right? It's like, I think we're fine. You know, I'm telling you my experience. He's telling you his. I feel a little envious of that, but I can't even imagine how that would have worked out in my family. So I can let that go pretty quickly. But I can be glad. I can be glad for you. I see the look on your face when you say that and realize you're talking about real joy. And yeah. And that's beautiful. We're all different.
I'm making the turkey. And first of all, let me just say, you know, like some people justifiably consider the idea of Thanksgiving an affront, you know, because of the genocidal history of, you know, the United States, and, you know, don't like to celebrate Thanksgiving for that reason. And I, you know, all the respect for that, but, I am making the turkey and I'm using my, Sue Ann's mother's recipe, that even her own children cop to never having gotten right. That nobody gets it right. But mom, for this recipe. And anyway, I'm making this for my family, so I've got to deal with whatever their withering criticism is going to be of the outcome for it. And then I've got to do right by, you know, or I would like to do right by, let me put it that way, by, you know, the kind of the ancestral quality of, you know, of the bird. And so I'm hoping I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to work really hard on it, and hopefully people will like it. Hopefully it's not overdone or underdone or, you know, yucky.
May the force be with you, young Jedi.
That's it. I was going to say, I hope to see you on the other side, Patrick.
Tend your life. Tend your myth. Cultivate your narrative with whomever you are.